Okay, returning to work. Now it's deja vu. The next two papers were ones that we had for the last meeting and had to defer. And Akemi, please take it away. We're on paper 14. Please commence.
This issue is about the availability of refunds from a defined benefit plan managed by an independent trustee according to IFRIC 14. Specifically, the submitter raised a question as to whether an employer has an unconditional right to a refund of a surplus and recognizes an asset. In the case in which the trustee has discretion to use a surplus by augmenting benefits to members or winding up a plan through purchase of annuities or both. The outreach result implies that this issue is not common in many jurisdictions, but is common in UK and exists in a few jurisdictions. As described in detail in page 13, the trustee's powers vary among plans, and the unilateral power that is exactly the same as in the submission could be less common even in UK, but the trustee's power to purchase annuities is quite common. The sub-recommendation is presented starting on page 14. We think that the fact that any surplus could be decreased or extinguished by uncertain future event is not relevant to the recognition of an asset, because this fact may affect the amount of the right, but does not affect the existence of the right, as implied in paragraphs 11 and BC 10 of IFRIC 14. Consequently, the trustee's power to augment the benefits, wind up the plan, or to buy annuities is not directly relevant to recognition of an asset. We note that some of the trustee's powers may enable the trustee to refuse an entity's request for refund. If a trustee can refuse an entity's request for refund, we think that it is clearly relevant to recognition in accordance with paragraph 12 of IFRIC 14. We also note that the current IFRIC 14 and IS 19 provides other clear guidance that could be relevant to this issue, as presented in paragraphs 63 and 64 of this paper. We think that this issue meets the agenda criteria for annual improvements. Consequently, we propose the amendment to IFRIC 14, adding the last sentence to paragraph 12 to clarify the relationship with BC 10 and paragraph 11, shown in paragraph 69 of this paper. We would like to ask whether the committee agree with the staff analysis and recommendation. Thank you.
Scott?
I think I agree with the analysis. If I understand the following couple of points correctly. Number one, I believe the staff is saying that if the trustee can direct excess amounts to enhance benefits, that would need to be taken into account in calculating the DBO in the first place. So I'm not sure that that was clear until this write-up, and I believe whatever we issue should make that clear, that when you, the place you consider that is in figuring out the DBO. So I think the staff is saying that, and then I think when the staff says the possibility that benefits might be enhanced by the trustee in the future is not directly relevant to an asset, to whether an asset exists, is because you're basically saying the question is, today, is there an amount that the entity would have a right to? And if that is correct today, the fact that it might change in the future doesn't stop you from recognizing the asset. However, put that together, and the trustee's powers might affect the measurement of any asset that exists and might actually drive the measurement down to zero if you believe that the trustee will enhance the benefits. Then you would take that into account, you would have a bigger defined benefit obligation. There wouldn't be an asset. The asset that you might be able to recognize might well be measured at zero. If I got all that right, I agree with the technical analysis. I don't believe that the proposed amendment is the way to handle it, unless the basis for conclusions is really good. The sentence that you propose to add, I think, you know, gets at one aspect of it, but doesn't get at what I think is equally important on the measurement side of the obligation. In addition, the sentence says, the fact that any surplus could be decreased or extinguished by uncertain future events not within the entity's control is not directly relevant. Oh, so it's indirectly relevant. So now what do I do? I don't, you know, it's either relevant or it's not relevant. It's not directly or indirectly relevant. So I think we would get rid of the word directly, and you know, without that word, I think the sentence is correct, now that I understand the technical analysis. It's just only a portion of what needs to be taken into account to deal with this correctly. So I think we need either more amendment, or maybe the basis for conclusions would resolve it, or we need to think of a different way to communicate this.
So absent the adverb control, which is almost always useful, I think your point is that the sentence is correct but not sufficient.
Correct.
Okay. Ferrant?
I have concerns. Disagree with the stating that it is just a measurement issue rather than a recognition issue. I first question, what is the substance of a right if indeed before you can access to anything, the trustees can whip out anything that is in that surplus? So I would question the substance of that right and the existence of an asset. Secondly, I'm not sure I see a difference between a case where indeed you have these rights and the trustees can refuse an entity's request for a refund, okay, rather than formally saying no, they just whip out everything, and so you end up with zero surplus. What's the difference between the two scenarios that would justify a different type of accounting? And I do believe that the amendment is really confusing, because when I read the first sentence of paragraph 12 of IFRIC 14, and it seems that the sentence that you're just adding is just contradicting what is really written in the first sentence. If the entity's right to refund depends on the occurrence or non-occurrence of one or more uncertain future events not within its control, the entity doesn't have an unconditional right and shall not recognize an asset. So for me, it's completely confusing to see that amendment is really confusing. And finally, I question, how does this fit with BC 12 in IFRIC 14, because it does refer to trustees' actions and clarifying that if you can expect some trustees' actions, this may question the fact that you have an asset.
So, summarizing, your point is there's no need for the sentence.
First of all, I disagree with the conclusion that is presented in the paper, because I think that otherwise it's going to be very easy. You include a right to refund in any documents, whatever the trustees may decide before, and any company can recognize an asset. In which case won't you recognize an asset?
So you're saying that the IFRIC 14 already prohibits recognition, we don't need to go any farther.
That's BC 12 for me is clear enough to get to the view that if trustees can act, you don't have an asset.
Okay, I'm going to start then with John and move around the circle in this direction. John?
I mean, I agree with the staff analysis. I think it's clear that if you have a right that you control, you have an asset, and then the measurement of that asset will be a function of the various things that might happen to the amount of the refund. So I think I'm in agreement with the staff analysis 100%.
So you're happy with the one sentence, or would you expand it to embrace the measurement issue as well?
I mean, I was happy enough given the question and the issue that was asked.
Okay. Sweeping through. Fei Long?
I agree with most of this stuff.
Sorry, John, I pushed the wrong button, but let's go with Fei Long and then bring John in.
Okay. I agree with most of the stuff, the technical analysis, but I suggest to not add this to the agenda through AIP, because the trust is probably vary among each plan. So without clearly identify the power of trustee, any conclusion may be misleading. If we take this to the agenda as to annual improvement, it is necessary to clarify what kind of the power of trustees has. And also suggest not to do not amend the April 14 paragraph 12. The change that does not resolve the issue whether the trustee's power to argument benefits or to win up a plan affect the employee's unconditional right to reform. And thus restrict recognition of an asset. So the change may cause more confusion without further interpretation.
So you'd be in the camp of saying, do nothing. Leave 14 alone, don't make any adjustments?
Yeah.
Okay. John, I'm sorry I missed you there.
Well, I think the question of whether it's a recognition or measurement issue, I think the analysis is technically right. I can see the difference, but it's always a bit tricky whether it's measurement or recognition. Here my concern is, it's a bit to echo what Lawrence says. My concern is essentially, you know, the trustee can strip out all the value tomorrow at its will. That's basically what I understand. So, well, we don't have a recognition issue. It's a measurement issue, and the way it's drafted now, I think it may be interpreted that you know, then you can recognize the asset because it's a measurement. Just figure that out in the measurements or make a guess as to the likelihood that this these individuals will act on it. So I think. The substance of reform is, I think, it's essentially the same thing. I can be stripped out of my asset by an entity that I don't control, an individual that I don't control. Therefore, I'd be very I'm troubled by the two this analysis that says, okay, if you have a right, but the trustee can say, I don't allow you this right, this is worth nothing. But if I have a right and the trustee can strip all the value of that right, then the answer might well be, well, you know, book the asset and don't worry. I think the agenda might lead to that, and I dislike this conclusion. I don't think it's correct.
So you would not amend? Okay. Tony?
I'm pretty comfortable with the staff's analysis. I don't see that the two sentences in 12 are inconsistent because the first one talks about the existence of a right, and the second one says that things that might happen in the future don't take away the right to have that surplus, whatever it is. And so, yeah, I've got the right to the surplus today. It may, in fact, disappear in the future because the fair value of the plan assets crashes. So that doesn't change the fact that I have the right to it today. So I think it does become an issue of measurement, and what you need to think about is whether or not the trustees have the ability to say you can't have the surplus. Mm. Because if the trustees don't have that ability, then I think you have the right to that surplus as it exists today, and that we're accounting for the surplus as it exists today, not what it might be at some stage in the future. So I'm comfortable with it. What I would say is, given that I think there is uncertainty or diversity of views around that point. And so I guess I'm sort of, I agree with the analysis, but I'd really like to see the way it's written up in the basis. Because I think that's, I think where, I understand why people struggle with saying, well, you book the asset, but it might disappear. But what we're accounting for is the right. And if that right exists, I think we should account for it. And so I'd just like to see the way it's written up in the basis.
So rather than adding to the amendment, if you'd accept the sentence that's added,
without the word directly, but
without the word,
I'd be comfortable with it. I just say I think it needs to be very tightly worded in the basis.
But the basis would have to take you through step by step, essentially.
Yeah.
Okay. Reinhard?
My comments are similar. I agree with the technical analysis on the existence of the rate, but I think, as others are saying, the measurement is inextricably linked. And so I think it's important to address that issue as well, to ensure that there's no diversity in practice in terms of how it's applied. And so whether that gets built up as part of the basis for conclusions or what, but I do think just answering the question, is does the right exist, without addressing measurement, and is not going to reduce diversity.
Okay, so you're kind of with Tony.
Right.
Okay. Mark?
The question for me really is, how strong are the trustees, and could, in such a country where the trustees have such a, say, power, what would be the effect if we do nothing? According to my reading of IFRIC 1412, I would say then we wouldn't be allowed to recognize an asset. Quite clearly, technically this is quite clearly, and this is more or less currently the accounting consequence. However, no one ever has accounted for it so far, I guess, because everyone accounted for the surplus as an asset. So in fact, what we try with an additional wording or with this interpretation is really to change, well, the accounting standard or the accounting outcome. So therefore, if we really want to change this, we probably have to add some words as done here. However, I'm not, well, in a way, when we add this sentence, we say we do not have control. However, we might recognize it and measure it. And that sounds, in a way, strange for me. But I fear that we are all afraid, really, to say, okay, we want to live with the consequence that we do not, well, recognize and measure this surplus. So I guess more or less the outcome here of the whole table would be, okay, we want to end up economically with a surplus which the corporates are allowed to recognize. If this is and should be the outcome, then I guess we have to add something.
So you're in the add measurement guidance. Okay. Okay. Keeping my sequence, I'm going to go to Andrew, and then I'm going to work backwards.
Yes, I agree with the technical analysis in the paper, and also with others who said that the either the basis or the amendment itself needs to be clearer. In particular, the analysis distinguishes between a trustee's right to refuse a request for a refund and a trustee's right to enhance benefits in the future. And I think without some of that clarity coming into the basis for conclusions, the words as drafted, the amendment to paragraph 12, could be inconsistently applied. There is inconsistency at present. I also agree with that. But I agree that the accounting for the scheme should follow the legal or constructive benefits that are currently provided, and not anticipate future possible enhancements to benefits, however they may come about.
Sandy?
I guess my initial reading of it was consistent with Laurence's reading, and I read those two sentences and I said, that's bizarre, they exactly contradict each other. we're seemingly saying that I have the right to receive this surplus, but I've ceded that right to somebody else to tell me that I can't have it, but we're going to net those when we measure them. Am I missing something? Because how is am I, as a user of the financial statements, knowing that the plan has a surplus, but then I've given it to someone else, and they've said no, or they might say no, so I might not measure it. How do I see through that? How do I understand what's going on there? I just see this net measurement.
Well, you'll see the net measurements. However, to the extent that the entity has determined or has estimated how much of that effect is going to flow through to the defined benefit obligation, there will either be an increase in the defined benefit obligation if they're, for instance, going to be using that surplus to improve.
Will that
benefits.
Be communicated to me? Because I feel like I have a right to the surplus, and then in the construct of the plan, I've ceded the right to the trustee to make the decision for me. So a right minus a right gives me a measurement issue. Right?
But when you say you've ceded the rights.
The trustee, in the construct of the plan, the trustee now has the ability to decide whether I get the refund to the plan back.
Well, if the trustee has the ability to decide to refuse your request for a refund,
right,
then that would be a recognition issue. If the trustee can make bad investments, or if the trustee can increase the benefits to the plan participants, then that's more of a measurement issue, and that will affect the measurement of the net amounts.
But let's say there is a surplus, and they've denied it to me. They said, no, we're going to do something else with it. But they haven't done it yet. Okay? But they say they're going to, so I'm going to reduce, say the plan has a surplus. The trustee says, no, we're not going to give it back to you.
Yeah.
You're going to say, I'm going to net that off, and I'm going to show that as a net measurement issue, rather than the fact that the trustee exercised their right. I mean, to me, it's an option, right? I've given them an option, and
let's
they
ask one question at a time.
Okay.
Hit him with about four in
sequence. Okay. Because I'm trying to, I see Laurence's point, and I see others' point, but I'm also saying that, you know, I'm netting things off. To me, it feels like I have a right under the plan, and then I have a right that I've given to the trustee. They're both rights.
Yeah.
So to me, those are recognition issues, and then there's a measurement issue.
I think that
with each.
Yeah, there. You have a right to a refund or not, and I think this is what we're trying to distinguish from perhaps the right of the trustee to invest the plan assets however they do, or perhaps enhance those benefits, and we're trying to distinguish those two. The right of the entity to claim any surplus, whether that's nil or not, is one factor,
mm-hmm.
and the right of the trustee to invest those is taken into account in measurement. The fact that the trustee can make bad investments or use those assets to increase benefits doesn't affect your right to get those assets if there is a surplus at the end of that.
But Manuel,
in terms of
how we would reflect the trustee's ability to enhance the benefits, I think that's perhaps the
he has a couple things to do. He can make bad decisions. Let's take that off the table for a second, because the world can happen and the surplus can disappear. I get that.
Yep.
Like I don't, and that's really what the second sentence is saying, right? But that's not the same thing as I've constructed a plan and given the right to someone else. And
in most of these jurisdictions, you didn't have a right. You didn't have the ability to make that choice.
Okay. Well,
the plan the plan is required to be trusteed independently. So that you didn't give anything away. I think your question, the essence of your question is, where in the pension footnote am I going to know the impact of this factor?
Yeah.
And the answer is, maybe not at all, because there's an enormous amount of netting in that disclosure, and you're not. You don't do today. So unless you add to the required disclosure of pensions, I think your answer is you don't.
But as an investor in the company, I need to know that trustee has that right.
Patricia, if it was material,
that's a different issue. But in the normal operation of the pension, you're probably not going to see it. Patricia?
Well, I can't lay my hands on a copy of 19 at the moment, but I think there's huge amount of disclosure, and I think it does require the terms of the plan to be disclosed, and it seems to me the trustee's right to do this under the plan is a key factor in the plan that should be disclosed.
Oh, there's no question about that.
Okay.
The impact of that on the net, what is an enormously netted number already, you're probably not going to see unless it's incredibly material. In the case of, I can't conceive of situation, but I think, based on my reading of 19, that you're probably, Sandy, you're not going to get what you want. Tony?
Two observations. One, I do think you should get what you want from the disclosures. I'll come back to that. I think there are two things that the trustees could do, and I wonder if we're in danger of mixing them up. The trustees might have an absolute right to say to the company, doesn't matter what the surplus is, you can't have it. And if that's the case, and there are some plans that are written in a way that says that the trustees can just say no, you can't have the surplus. That's a recognition question. And I think that's what the staff's analysis said. So that's where the trustees can say, don't matter, even if this plan finishes with a surplus, the trustees can still say to the company, you can't have it. We're going to give it to charity or whatever they do. That's a recognition issue.
Yeah.
And I think if you were applying the asset ceiling by reference to that recognition issue, then you would write it in the disclosures. So I don't think you'd be missing it. So that's one thing the trustees could do. The second thing they could do is they have the right to invest the assets. They could have the right to enhance benefits. That doesn't affect the company's ability to access whatever surplus exists. It does, however, potentially impact the amount of that surplus. So it's not necessarily that they make bad decisions, but they could decide to go cautious, they could decide to go aggressive or whatever with their investments, or they could decide to enhance the benefits. And that's what I think Manuel and Acme are saying is a measurement issue, because you think about that, how that would flow through. And I think the right to say no to giving up the surplus and the ability to make investment decisions or enhance benefits are two quite fundamentally different things.
I think
that's what the staff, and Manuel, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's the distinction that you're drawing out.
That's right. Yeah.
And I think that will be disclosed if the asset ceiling kicked in, or in the terms of the plan, as Patricia suggested.
No, I wasn't questioning that, but I think the distinction you're making is an important one. And the only way I think you can make that analysis is to say what happens when the last plan participant dies. And if the answer to that is the company's still left with nothing, I do think that's an important disclosure if there's a significant surplus already.
What this demonstrates is the need for the basis to be pretty clear, I think.
Now, I'm wondering, we always say don't put in the basis something you should have put in the standards.
Yeah.
Laurence?
I was wondering whether we don't, we're not having the appropriate discussion. What is the assets that we want to recognize on the books? It's the surplus. Okay, we are discussing whether the surplus can be recognized as an asset. And for the surplus to be recognized as an asset, one characteristic for the asset is that you control the economic benefits flowing from the asset. So surely you need to have a right for refund, but in order to ensure that you control the economic benefits flowing from the asset, you must ensure that the trustees are not going to whip out what's your asset in the first place. So this is why I'm saying the debate should be focused on the surplus itself, not the right. Yes, obviously you have a right, you control the right, no doubt without that. But please focus on the right discussion. The discussion is, what is the asset we want to recognize on the books? It is the surplus. Do you control that asset? Yeah, you may, because you have a right, but watch out, because here, someone else can take the economic benefits away from you. And so this is why I'm saying that in this type of situation, and conclude that, no, BC 12 says so. I read again, no? The IFRIC concluded that an entity controls the asset only if the entity has an unconditional right to refund. If that right depends on action by a third party, the entity does not have an unconditional right. I agree.
But that focuses on the rights, Laurence, not on the eventual outcome. If we start to look to the outcome, the potential outcome in terms of recognition, then I think we might get into some problems.
Then I come back to my view, which is what is the asset you're recognizing and demonstrating control over.
Okay, we're starting to circle around and re-argue the same three alternatives. So, John, Martin, Patricia, did you want to come in again?
Yes. In my heart of hearts, I agree with Laurence. I don't think that the plan sponsor controls the assets in the plan. I think the trustees control the assets in the plan, although I think there is language in 19 that suggests that this is an exception to the conceptual framework notion of control of an asset. I think 19 is just a different animal.
Completely different model.
A different model than normal. And so I think the staff analysis is correct, but like others, I think we need a lot more words around it to explain why. Because I think Laurence is correct. The plan sponsor does not control the assets in the plan. The plan trustees do.
Okay, that's plan B in my summary. John?
I was just going to make the comment that I think the asset we're talking about is the right to the refund. It's not actually the refund itself. It's the right to the refund and whether that exists. And paragraph 12 of IFRIC 14 says it's the entity's right to the refund of a surplus if the right depends upon the occurrence or non-occurrence. In other words, if the trustee has to approve that you have that right, then it doesn't exist. Anything that they do around the refunds or the surplus, spending it or enhancing benefits, is not relevant to the existence of the right. If you have that right and it's unconditional at balance date, then that's the asset that you're actually looking to measure. So I agree with the staff's analysis in terms of the asset they're focusing on. It's actually the right to the surplus.
That's one of the alternatives too. Martin, last call.
I'm more on this issue that, for me, it is not the measurement issue. I mean, if the trustee really has the right to invest it in certain equities or so, I wouldn't care. I have no difference in measurement at all. My measurement is the fair value at balance sheet date of all the assets. So I see no reason why I should reduce this value in a way just because the trustee has the right to invest it in a certain portfolio. However, from a recognition point of view, I believe it is a valid argument to say, okay, if up to the amount of fully funded, I'm assured that I will get back all this money in a way, so I have the economic benefit, then that's fine. But everything which is above this limit, I have a certain degree of, say, uncertainty. And this is really then depending on the occurrence of the decision of the trustee later on, whether I will get this surplus or not. Then I really say it's not within my control and I'm not able to recognize.
Okay, as I say, we're circling around what I think are three different approaches to this one. And I've actually written them down this time. Approach one is do nothing. Essentially saying IFRIC 14 is sufficient to answer the question. Approach two accepts the staff's analysis and addition, but needs a lot more. It needs a discussion of the measurement. It needs a discussion of the distinctions. And we have to decide, and that is in constructing a lot more. Some of that's going to be in the basis. Some of it's going to be in the amendment. The third alternative is to accept staff's proposal as written without the adverb. So we remove the word directly, but other than that, we accept it as written. First preferences, do nothing. IFRIC 14 is sufficient. Scott, do you have your hand up, or are you just playing with your pen? Okay.
Sorry.
We had three first preferences for do nothing. Second one, add stuff, and particularly on measurement. First preferences.
Nine out of 13.
That's 9 out of 13. Does anyone, who would object to that course of action? Lawrence? Okay. The staff has more work to do.
Hi.
Pointing at the clock, but go ahead.
It is a significant issue. And I think that it's more than an annual improvement here.
I think the minute we start adding volume to it, it starts to look like more than an annual improvement. Whether it's an interpretation or an amendment would be a decision we have to make later. Okay, that was fun.